On today's Compassion Radio.
We don't have to figure it out. We don't have to know how everything works, and we're never going to prove it logically.
Yeah.
But if we say yes to what God is asking us to do, we can't lose, really. I mean, we can lose physically, we can lose some things in an earthly sense, but we're not going to be left or abandoned or not taken care of spiritually.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to a powerful insider's look at the life of cross-cultural ministry in the age of COVID. In a few short years, Scott Molvar and his family have already seen plenty in their position with Josiah Venture as country leader for Croatia. We've got a lot to cover today, so we'll get right back to where we left off yesterday. So tell me about your family. I mean, I got the chance to meet your kids and your wife. They're all firecrackers. Everybody in your family has just got high energy. I love them all. We have children that are about the same age, at least the younger one. And having had the chance for them to meet each other and walk around and play a bit, just to get to know each other for like a couple of days, I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if I could just camp out here for a while and really get to know the Molvar family? I think it would be a blast for him, and he would really feel rooted in with other people that love you, Lord, like we do. I left every interaction we had on our trip last year feeling like I lost something every single time. And your family was right at the very top of that for me because I could sense it. I knew that we as couples would really get along well, but I also knew that my son was getting blessed big time and my bigger kids enjoyed getting to know you all as well. So it was a really rich time for me. But tell me how you're coping and leading them through this, and how are your family ministering to you in ways you did not expect?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And I probably need to go to the depth of how it all went and reveal some of myself to answer that question. But I would say one of the things that our family experienced was that we lost our rhythm and we lost some of the stuff that made us us in some degree, because we are active people and we are pretty outgoing. And we had rhythms. We had rhythms of, you know, going out to celebrate with a dinner. And we had rhythms of traveling. We're big travelers. We like to hop in the car whenever we can. And so after month 2 and 3 and 4 in the apartment, we had seasons here in Croatia where you're only allowed to leave for groceries and that's it from your apartment. Those seasons were really hard. And when you lose things you're used to, and even maybe the distractions from some of the difficult stuff, you're forced to deal with that stuff and you're forced to have those conversations. So I would say my family ministered to me most because I'm the kind of antsiest ADD kind of guy in the family. And I had a hit to my self-worth. You know, who am I? What am I if I'm not out and about doing my thing? And if I'm not socializing, what's my value? And I remember my wife ministered to me very well. She said, well, this is the season that you do that for us. This is the season that you can concentrate on exactly what we're doing and we can teach each other things. One funny story was we rigged up a ping pong table in our balcony.
That's not a big balcony.
No, it's not big, no, but it was big enough for his ping pong table. And we played ping pong every day, several hours a day. I had moments with my kids that I wouldn't have any other way. So it was tough. And it was hard, especially for the hard chargers, where we were stuck doing nothing for quite some time. But I was happy to see and happy to hear from my family as they ministered to me in a time when it was most difficult for me and probably my daughter, who are the most outgoing. And we're just saying, what do we do today? What is our goal today? How do we, how do we serve today? And it's really like the only way we can serve today is to walk to the store and, you know, get a can of tuna or whatever it might be.
So you find yourself skipping along the sidewalk to do something.
Yeah, I would say we learned a lot about ourselves and we also learned who we are when we can't do the things that we want to do.
How's the lockdown going now? I know the secondary surges are happening across Central Europe, like up in Czech Republic where JV is based. And different countries are responding differently in this next phase. But what's happening in Croatia now? Is it getting hit as hard as some other parts are with these new variants?
No, Croatia's numbers are pretty good. The problem that we're facing right now is that Croatia had a bad tourism summer last year. Mm-hmm. And the economy really can't handle 2 summers in a row without having most of Europe take its vacation here. Mm-hmm. So they're really trying to be very careful, not necessarily just for the numbers and how they look today, but to preserve that summer feeling and confidence from some of the other folks up north who would come down here for their vacation. So there's quite a lot of ad campaigns saying, you know, safe in Croatia, come take your summer vacation, those kinds of things. So we're keeping maybe more lockdown than we need right now, but hoping that that will help us have a good summer. And the economy really needs that right now.
As simple as that is, it's actually a decent prayer request. If anything that are people in America be thinking of is God, can you, for the sake of your kingdom, if nothing else, you got people that are working for you in Croatia to build a new hope, a new future there. Bless them enough that they can survive, that they'll have enough income that the country doesn't collapse under the weight of economic problems that they can't bear up under. Because they're a small enough country that there's a very thin line between solvency and non-solvency, and there are a lot of very strict rules within the EU. And the EU does not have a lot of capacity right now to buck up some of the smaller members. So we'd be praying for those things, that God would choose to bless his people, especially those on the front lines like you, Scott, and give them not just the rewards of some release and be able to get back to some sort of sanity, but to literally make the breakthroughs and build up the walls that need to be built so that they have a future and a hope. Pray for that. I want to jump to one more subject before we wrap up our conversation here. Tell me about what it was like after the earthquake. Now, I know a lot of people in America did not even register that over the holidays, that you had a pretty devastating earthquake in the central part of your country. Again, Croatia's not big, but you stepped right in. I texted you right away to say, what's really going on? And you answered me back really fast, too. But you were also very busy, up to your neck in ways that you could get your people mobilized to help in the name of Jesus. Tell me about the event and why you got involved and what happened with it.
Yeah, so it was quite a big earthquake, which ended up being, you know, it's never just one. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being over 100 earthquakes over a 30 to 60-day period of time, most of them over three, and most of them fairly significant. And so the capital city, Zagreb, where we are, wasn't hugely impacted. I mean, there were quite a lot of things going on in the older town section where construction methods were older and more historical, is the right way to say it.
Brittle.
And there were a lot of buildings damaged there. And there were a lot of families that were needed to be relocated and buildings that need to be repaired and or replaced. And that is still going on. But the biggest bulk of the issue actually came in some outlying villages where structures were not nearly in as good a shape and people economically were not in good shape. And so the epicenter was a bit out in these villages and whole homes completely collapsed. People died. Water, food, electricity, gas, these things are all disrupted. And so, yeah, our pastor, along with those in our mission organization and in our church, immediately mobilized with a combination of other churches and said, what can we do? What can we offer? And we've since embarked on several projects. First was just relief, bringing things to people, gathering simple, basic items. Second wave was actually administering some donations that had come from the States. There are quite a few diaspora, as they're called here, of Croatians who live in America. And they gathered together and sent quite a lot of funds. And our pastor, along with the Baptist denomination, were blessed to be part of a group of people who were distributing those funds to those who were most in need after that. And then now we're in a kind of a third wave where we're trying to rebuild some structures that were critical to the area. So we've taken on a project as a church of rebuilding a small market that is really the only market for about 15 to 18 miles. Of rural community.
Most of the people that are in these smaller villages would not necessarily have a car for the family. There are many places where if you had one car for the group of people that live on your block, it was a big deal. So just physically getting around during the cold months is bad enough. But now you've got COVID on top of that, or inability to even buy fuel. It's tight. It's very tough. So when you look at the market, you say, a market, come on, they got insurance. This is a business. This is not a ministry thing. You're saying that it's an essential function of a community to have access to food, to have access to clean water, things like that.
Yes, and when we found them during these relief efforts, we found that the postman was bringing milk and eggs and butter in his postal car to some of these homes because people simply couldn't get out and get things. He would load up the mail and he would load up milk and eggs and he would deliver those to the families. And we started asking questions, you know, what's going on? Well, people don't have enough cars. They don't have a method of transportation. And now the closest market is a long way. And even that one is damaged. So the one that we're focused on, basically the whole building completely sheared off the foundation. Mm. And so they're considering replacing it with either shipping containers or with some sort of a prefab structure so that we can get this market going immediately to serve these people. This was a family business. There's no insurance. It's not part of a chain. It's not part of a corporation. It was a woman who was running this and she had no funds to rebuild. So that's the current phase right now, is rebuilding this market and getting this community mobilized again with just basic needs.
How far do you have to go out to help with that project, and how often can your people be out there to do the work?
It's about an hour's drive out there to where those in most need are. And it depends on the people. We are blessed in the sense that we have a good amount of single ladies, or we have widows or people who are on pension or those kinds of things that can go out during the middle of the day and administer to people. And then we have a good deal more people who can go on evenings and weekends. And so it just works out with whoever's available, and someone will coordinate transportation and go out there and do the best we can. Baptist Union also has more resources in the form of being able to mobilize people from multiple churches and being able to mobilize funds from other denominations and from other countries and help out with the funds. But the labor is actually some of the most difficult things to find during this.
Tell me about the spiritual fruit evident in those who step up and say, "Yes, Lord, send me." This obviously is a prime example. They're stepping into something that they were not expecting to do, but it's an opportunity, and it transcends even COVID. You have to find a way to keep people from dying, so you got to do it carefully. In some respects, it's probably almost a relief. I get to actually get out and do something positive. But on the spiritual level, once you step in and say you're available to God, and then you actually do it, not just say you're available, but you become available. Tell me about how they're growing in their faith because of it.
Yeah, I think that maybe in our societies, even in Croatian society, what we see, everything seems to be working. And even the things that aren't working, you accept it. And you say, it's broken, but I know it's broken. And we go about our day and we do our things, and things generally work. But when an earthquake comes or when a pandemic comes, things don't work anymore. And suddenly you have this moment where you can see need. And need is very apparent to you in front of your eyes. And we've seen people who either don't have a faith, or their faith is very inactive, or it was childhood faith, become part of a group of people who are serving and loving their community. And this helps them unlock their own journey. Hey, why am I doing this? What are the reasons that I'm helping people? And when I see people helped and transformed through helping them, how does it make me feel? And how does it make me reflect on God as creator, as God being with me, as in a personal relationship? So those questions become easy bridge conversations, and they become unlocked when we serve. I mean, I guess personally, as a human being, I believe that service is part of what we're created to do. And when we serve, we're not far from our creator, and we're not far from having spiritual conversations when we're serving from our hearts.
Any of us who are really thinking about this right now are thinking, God, I want to do something meaningful in life. I want to be living a life full of purpose and meaning. I mean, I've asked myself that every day before I sit down before this microphone. Am I really doing something that matters? It's not about me, but at the same time, if it's the only thing I could see is me in the way, I better get outside myself a bit here, find out what God's up to. And for me personally, it's meant going to people like you, Scott, to see what God is already doing in the places where his hand is eagerly at work, preparing the way, new pathways for the gospel, new outposts of witness and of kingdom culture and kingdom presence. The kingdom is growing in Central Eastern Europe, and you're at the forefront of that. And I'm thrilled about it. Before we go, give me in the broad strokes here, what is it about Croatia and the work that you do now that you are so glad you said yes to Jesus to go to do?
That's a great question. I think the hardest thing to explain, but maybe the easiest thing that you can understand, is when you're working with a group of people and it's not hard to work with them, that is the easiest piece to do every day.
When you're all agreeable.
Yeah, there's no such thing as working with people when they're not difficult. That exists. But I believe, and my family believes this now, that we're in Croatia and we're serving, that these are our people. While we're not born in the same villages and we don't even speak the same language in many cases, we get along well in this place and people accept us very well for what we're doing. And there's no real reason to explain that. There's no logical reason to explain that, but we just love serving Croatian people and they love us well back. And that's really what gets you through the hard parts. And that's what gets you through the days when you can't get a visa and you're not sure if you're going to be able to stay and the car doesn't work and whatever, any number of terrible things that do happen to you when you're doing this kind of work. It's all overshadowed by the fact that there's a deep love and respect for people here. And the way that people take care of each other is on another level, something that I had never experienced in my life until our family arrived and did work here.
And you're there for the long haul, as far as I know. And let's God opens the door for you to do something else that you're not expecting. He has the right to upset our plans. Yet you're committed. I can tell your love is there. You would be very content to stay put on that field and with those people, because it's the kingdom. You want to build the kingdom there. Help us to understand how to pray for Croatia and the people that you're working with.
Yeah, I guess on the top level, what we've been talking about is economic for the recovery of this earthquake damage and the people, as well as the economic recovery from tourism. I don't think Croatia enjoys the space that it's in, but a large chunk of the economy is derived from tourism, and that needs to continue, especially in the wake of this earthquake response. Yeah. So first and foremost is just something practical in order for us to be successful and for the country to remain functional. These things need to resume, and COVID is a big problem for those things to continue the way they are. I guess secondly, we are working with next generation young people, up until mid-20s and even sometimes up until 30. And what we see is a completely different group of people who don't remember socialism, who don't remember a war, who don't see the divisive lines of their previous generation. They're more of a world citizen type of group of people. And what we pray for them would be that leaders would emerge, and that leaders would desire to take this country and make it their own and lead it to a new and different place. So we pray regularly for the rising of new youth leaders who can help with those who have brought the country this far. They can continue moving that country forward from time and on after that.
And build on a foundation that is solid. I mean, from the core of their soul, that Jesus is right at the middle of that.
Yep.
What's the last thing?
Last thing I would say to you is that we're really praying that we can resume some of these gatherings and some of these outreaches to young people and to college campuses and to even young people inside of our church in a way that ignites them again. Because what we've seen with young generation through COVID is just, it's a wet blanket on youth.
Yeah.
It really stops activity. It stops their day-to-day lives. You know, this is a part of the population that's hanging out outside every day, all day long. And this has really squashed it. So we pray for that life that we used to see around the city, young people hanging out and asking hard questions and dialoguing about faith and things. We just pray for that to return, because we want it to return so we can have great gospel conversations as a result of young people living their lives out and about and in public. Mm-hmm. And we rely on that, and we think it's a big part of the culture that we want to use to tell people about Jesus. So we pray that those activities would resume.
Let me ask that hard question around that issue. In the States right now, everything I read says that the state of mental and emotional health and the suicide attempts and rates are skyrocketing in this country. I'm not sure if the agencies that track these things here are actually paying attention to the world community, but is there as much existential threat to the youth in Croatia as there seems to be here because of that seemingly enforced isolation that we're dealing with?
For sure. I mean, mental health has been a big conversation amongst public health sector here in Croatia, as well as those doing ministry in all capacities. Catholic, Protestant, doesn't matter. People have been focused on how do we help mental health of the population, and particularly young people. I think this is something that will become a great ministry tool for us now and in the future. Who will actually help people with the process, the feelings that they have, process the emotions that they're going through and that they will have been through when we see the backside of this? So our pastor is actually working on some counseling materials to respond to trauma. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're considering this an emotional trauma, maybe not on the same level as something that we can define, but over a long period of time, this will be looked back at as a traumatic moment. And we really want to be on the forefront of counseling, coaching, loving people through what we'll see as maybe a 1, 2, 3 year period of emotional trauma for a young person's life. And that's a significant portion of their formative years.
And defining who you are.
Yeah.
I remember talking with some of the folks that were working in the refugee camps in Lebanon, all of the Syrian refugees that were camped out in the corners of fields, not even in organized camps, just in little pockets all across the country. Kind of like we would see under bridges here in America for the homeless community, same kind of situation. They have both the acute trauma of some precipitating event that drove them out of their country. Then they have the long trauma of irresolution. Nothing seems to change. There's no hope in front of you. And now you're stuck with small children that are being raised in an environment where they've never known anything different than the corner of this tent in this mud puddle at the corner of this intersection of a culture that does not want you. Suddenly, they're the untouchables. And they were professionals in the country where they came from. So they are living through a long trauma. And they said that the acute trauma has its impact emotionally as well as physically. But there's something about the long trauma that is decaying hope, so much so that things like cancer are way on the rise. And people's physiological response to that stress is just inescapable. So I imagine that's the kind of stuff you're thinking about, that longer trauma there.
This is the next phase for our ministry, I think. I can't tell you accurately what this means right now. We are just understanding it ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think where maybe we were an event-based or event-driven ministry, we may become a counseling or a coaching-based ministry in the future, because yeah. I think that will yeah. be the open door, and that will be where the need is.
Yeah. I'm thrilled that you have a big network through Josiah Venture to help you guys, at least from a distance. And there's only so much anybody can do by Zoom. But there is something to be said for knowing that you have hundreds of people praying mm-hmm. for you.
That does help.
And all you have to do is shoot the flare up. If you put a flare up in the sky and a parachute's letting it swing down to earth, your network, your people will see that flare and they will immediately be on it with you. They'll be praying for you and checking in on you. Becoming that and inventing that concept, people who have never, ever had anybody watch out for them, not on the spiritual level.
Yeah, that's big. And across culture and across country, that's so rare. I mean, you know, we are blessed to have a local family, a biological family. We also have a spiritual family in our church. And we have even an organizational missionary family with JV. And all of those can contribute to prayer needs and physical needs on different levels. And I just feel blessed to even be part of that.
You are a rich, rich man, Scott.
Indeed.
Well, we look forward to God opening the doors finally for Sandy and I to get back and maybe spend some more time with you where you are or catch you on the rebound when you finally get back to the States. But I'm so glad you've been open enough to be willing to peel back the layers a bit for me about what it's like to be in the work. Because we talk about those frontline workers being somehow special, being amazing people, because they must have something I don't got. They're willing to go and do the impossible. And you have in some ways, but it all starts with a regular guy simply saying, this is what God's told me to do. I don't understand all of it or what it's going to mean, but you said yes, and you went. And when things changed on you, you didn't say suddenly, well, this is not the deal I signed up for. You were mature enough in your faith that you would turn back around and say, okay, God, what do you got for me now? I was not expecting this. And then you kept your eyes on the horizon, on the field. Where was the field white for harvest? Where did it need planting? Oh, I'm going to become this kind of farmer, not that kind of farmer. Okay, teach me how. I've seen that kind of attitude in you and your family, not just because of the Josiah Venture culture, which is like that, but because of you. You found your way into this family because God had already built those things into you.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say to people, we're just crazy people that say yes when God says something. And it's like maybe the fifth or sixth time in our lives since I've been married to my wife where we just felt like God had something for us and we responded to it, not knowing where it would go, not knowing if it would be lucrative or not lucrative, or yeah. it would be in dangerous, or it would keep us safe or whatever. And I don't feel that I'm such a special person for saying yes, but there is an amount of trust in it that I know that it will be what God has for us if we say yes and we chase that. And I pray as a father, as a husband, that that would be what I would show to my family as well, that we don't have to figure it out. We don't have to know how everything works and we're never going to prove it logically. Yeah. But if we say yes to what God is asking us to do, we can't lose really. I mean, we can lose physically, we can lose some things in an earthly sense, but we're not going to be left or abandoned or not taken care of spiritually.
It always amazes me how God tends to multiply with zero and come up with something positive. So his economy, emotionally, spiritually, physically, materially. Who cares where God starts with his work? He never, ever invests where he does not get a return. I think he's already getting an important return in your lives. You've had to enter into some suffering and some things that are very troubling. You've been faithful, and you've got friends. And please know that people hearing this radio program, wherever they are across America, are being challenged to pray for the Mulvars there in Zagreb, Croatia, for the work of Josiah Venture, and for many more Josiahs coming up underneath you, and many more partners like you stepping into the fray saying, you know what? This is the inflection point that I was waiting for in my life. God's going to use the season of COVID to change my whole trajectory. I'm going to get in the game here and be part of something bigger than I thought possible. I do believe God's going to raise people up in these circumstances to do the kind of work you're doing now. And Lord, does this world need it? There are so many corners, even in your part of the world up there, that have no gospel witness in the cities around you. I'm sure you're praying for the workers to come to the harvest.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, it's a numbers problem. And I don't mean finances. It's a numbers problem in terms of people who would be willing to come and serve and be part of something. We could clone ourselves 100 times and we'd still have work to do. God has the right people in the right place, and he knows where he's going, and he's leading us in his perfect plan. To anyone out there who is listening to the program and feels that there's something that they should be doing, follow that. Start small, and who knows where it goes from there.
Great things begin with small seeds. Scott Molvar of Zagreb, Croatia, I'm so glad you're part of the JV family as well. I look forward to getting more updates from you, and I want to find out what happens with that store.
Thank you for telling the story. It's great to be able to share with people what's going on and what God is doing here.
Scott Molvar and the amazing team of intrepid missionaries at Josiah Venture have not shied away from the tremendous challenges facing them in reaching Eastern Europe for Christ. They're in it for the long haul, and they've already seen God do his best work time after time when the going gets tough. It reminds me that we all still face great challenges in the days and months ahead, and that God must be in it with us, or there's really very little reason for real hope. With his help, however, we will get through this together. Call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or make your gift through our website, CompassionRadio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today. We'll see you tomorrow.